Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, and welcome to the Men's Voice. Glad to have you with us. I know that there are several people listening, and we want you really to get involved and join us this evening, ask questions, join in the conversation, whichever you prefer. There's nothing more to talk about than Tuesday of next week or this week, the election. There's a lot of things to talk about, but that seems to be prime on everything, every news media, everybody's mind is what's going to happen on Tuesday. One of the things that I think as on this particular show, and Frank was on a few minutes ago, I don't think he's still there, but I want to say that I can remember when Trump first started running, there were people on this panel that said he will never be the nominee. Why do we even talk about this? We don't need to. This is just a joke. He's just a joke. Let's not waste time on that. And I think this goes to show you never say never, because you never know who is going to be the nominee, who's going to win, and who is going to be out there doing these kinds of things. But so this is where we are. We got a Trump for candidate, and we have a female on the Democratic side who's running, and everyone wants to know what's going to happen. I think we're all suffering from election fatigue. I know I am. I'm tired of all the rhetoric back and forth and who's the worst and those people that say there's two evils and vote for the best, you know, the best of two evils. I think we've gotten to a place where we're just kind of stuck. But I want to start off with, what do we know about the vice presidential nominees? I mean, we're actually voting for a team, a president and a vice president, and I'm not sure that everyone really knows about all the vice president candidates and what they are, who they are. What do you know, Bruce, about – tell me a little, what do you know about Kane, Tim Kaine? Where is he from?
Well, let me tell you one – I have one more mix to it, and then I'll try and answer your question.
Sure.
If for some reason it ends up a tie as far as states, for some reason, the House of Representatives picks the president and the Senate picks the vice president. So they don't pick a ticket. They pick individuals. We could literally have a split ticket in the White House. Wouldn't that be something?
Right. I doubt it. I doubt it would happen, but it's possible.
It's possible.
With the Republicans holding both houses, I don't see that happening. But I also don't see a tie happening either. I think it would be amazing to see a tie happen. But I mean, it's possible. But once again, well, like I started, nothing is impossible in politics. But anyway, what do you know about the vice president? What do you know about the vice presidential candidates? What do we know about Tim Kaine?
Hey, can I start off with Tim Kaine? This is
sure.
Fun.
Yes. Well, he's from your state.
Of course. Tim Kaine is the guy that converted me from being a Republican to voting Democratic. I'm not a Democrat, but he converted me. And the reason why he converted me is because Tim Kaine, when I was comparing him running for election, he's been the mayor of a large Afro-American city in Richmond, Virginia. He's held every step of office in the Commonwealth of Virginia, including recently senator. But he was a missionary before he started, and Gilmore had a very good record as well. But the difference for me was that a guy took the time to go over, work in a developing country, South America, and professed his faith. Additionally, I later found out, through living in Virginia, I attended a funeral for one of the only Afro-American priests in the Diocese of Richmond at that time, who actually was a friend of mine, who's related to Vic, In fact, he's Vic's uncle. Kane befriended him many years ago. They had a super close relationship. So when this priest died at an early age, I attended a funeral. 100 and some priests were at that funeral. State police were there, and Tim Kaine was the speaker. He spoke for about 40 minutes. Anyone else, including the bishop in comparison, had about 1 minute. And what I found from that interesting thing, this is already after he was the governor, was that he had a personal relationship. John Boddy did not want him to attend his funeral. He died of cancer. And Vic was released, by the way, the same day. Michael Vic was released the same day of the funeral for his, or just a day or two before. But he did not want Tim Kaine to attend the his funeral to distract from, you know, what he was. And eventually he relented on that. And Tim related this at the funeral and said, hey, you know, I'm glad you had a change of heart because I was going to attend anyway. Kaine spoke of him about 40 minutes. The bishop that we had, like I said, had less than a minute, not even a minute, about this priest. It was practically like he didn't know him. But Tim had helped this priest move into Roanoke, Virginia. They basically got a U-Haul type truck, loaded up his furniture, and unpacked the truck during a snowstorm, had to pull themselves out of a ditch where the house was located with the U-Haul truck. It was quite a story to relate his personal relationship. So there's some assumptions I made. One was is that Tim Kaine and his wife, by the way, is a daughter of a governor that was involved in integration of the Virginia school system, Governor Dalton. They live in a predominantly Afro-American neighborhood. They attend a predominantly Afro-American church, and they've always been the right for the rights of minority peoples. Tim Kaine had won the largest lawsuit in the United States of America at that time against Nationwide, by the way. And guess what Nationwide was doing? They were redlining and not taking loans to Afro-American communities or minority communities, and they were busted. On that panel of lawyers is a cousin of mine from Texas that's also was part of that team who sung at his inauguration, which, you know, this was unbeknownst to me at the time. But Tim Kaine is a very personal guy. I think he was very helpful in teaching this Afro-American preacher to be a preacher from his heart. And so that's what I want to tell you about Tim Kaine. I have the utmost trust and confidence in him as a human being. And if I was to elect an individual or be behind an individual that I was willing to sacrifice my life for, it would be that type of individual. He basically represents a type of individual that I think that human beings should aspire to become.
All right. Well, we do know that he was the 70th governor of Virginia. He has a Harvard law degree, so he's obviously a brilliant person. What do we know about Mike Pence? Well, Bruce, I asked you originally about Tim Kaine. Is there anything that you know about him? Is his voting record or anything? What do you know about him?
Tim Kaine.
Okay, Don, tell me.
Okay. I'd like to kind of chime in to what Frank just said. Frank, I concur 100%. 3 weeks ago, Tim Kaine was in South Florida, and he came to our church at the Faith Center. And our ministry is very popular in South Florida. And when he was called up, first of all, nobody knew he was coming except the leaders in the ministry. And when he showed up, he came right up front and sat in the front row. And Bishop gave him the mic, and he took about 5 minutes talking about his beliefs and what he believed in, and did not get political. Did not even mention Don Trump's name. and then talked about the things that we must do in the kingdom. He's a very spiritual leader. And the thing I liked about him is he said, a lot of politicians like myself, they come to this church and then they go to that church and they go to that church and they try to make as many as they can on a Sunday morning. But I want to go over here and I'm going to have my seat, and Bishop, I came to hear you preach. And man, let me tell you, he won the heart of the members at the Faith Center in South Florida and yours truly, because he surely spoke like a man of God that would be a strong politician.
All right. So it looks like we got a couple of pluses for Tim Kaine, but I want to hear from Bruce or Ron. What do you know about Tim Kaine? What do you know, Bruce, about Tim Kaine?
Well, you Kaine or Pence?
Tim Kaine. We're still on Kaine.
Oh, are we? I think enough's been said on that. I'll let Ron take it if he wants to.
In other words, you don't know a whole lot about it.
No, I don't.
Thank you, Bruce.
No,
okay.
I don't.
And I think that's where most of us are. Ron, what do you know?
Well, the only thing I can add, which isn't really anything to add, is that I think I represent, I think I'm correct in saying that I represent the majority of Americans when I say that I really don't know much about either vice presidential candidate. And it's not because I'm ignorant. It's not because I'm stupid. I consider myself fairly smart. But it's because, you know, I'm a working American. I work 10, 12 hours a day, and I get home, and I have things to do, and I don't simply have time. I mean, I base my vote is based primarily on what I see on TV, which is mainly focused on Hillary and Donald. So, you know, I think I'm fairly accurate in saying that I think the majority of Americans, I would guess that if you went out into downtown Miami, for example, and asked randomly, asked people, tell me what you know about Pence and tell me what you know about Kaine, I wouldn't even be surprised that some of them might not even know who they are. So, you know, I think the media, you know, plays a huge role in the information that gets out there when it's time to vote for a candidate. And so I'm really not voting for a vice presidential candidate, although the little bit that I do know, I like Kaine a lot better than I do Pence. But, you know, most of the information that I have has been just primarily on the presidential candidate.
All right. Seems like we know a lot about personality, but we don't know a lot about their politics, how they're voting, what is their stance on abortion and all those kinds of things. And I think,
Hey, David, let's correct you.
Back to media. What is it?
Well, first of all, I do know a lot about, and I'm willing to share if you need that, about both of their politics, both of the
right.
vice presidential nominees. Kaine is a moderate and Pence is a conservative. The criticism on Kaine, some people that are very conservative think that his the Commonwealth of Virginia's funding went down during his tenure in office, and Pence has a problem with the law and the court system in regard to voting in Indiana. He has basically been for restrictive voting rights, and the court has called him up on it just recently. Both of them have a Catholic base. The difference in Pence is he's no longer a Catholic per se. He's evangelical. And so that's the points that I can tell you about both individuals.
All right. Well, I, you know, that's okay, but I don't think the world, I don't think we as citizens really know a lot about either one of them. I think, you know, so we know enough. I mean, if they're from your state, yeah, you know a little bit more about it, because I'm sure people from Indiana know more about Pence than any the rest of us about his voting rights and all those kinds of things. But Bruce, what do you know about Pence?
What do I know about Pence?
Governor. Yeah, he's the 50th governor of Indiana. He was the chair of the House of Republican Conference. He was a member of the House of Representatives from 23 to 13 to 2013. What else do we know about him? And the reason is these people might, it's possible they can become president, and we don't really know that much about them. What about Pence, Bruce? What do you know?
You're right. They can become president. Shame on most of us. Frank seems to have a better grasp on it than most of us, but I agree with Ron, and most people do not, including myself. But what I know about Pence is he's an evangelical Christian. He's strong belief in all that goes along with that title. Plus, he does a lot of behind-the-scenes support kinds of things with children and with problem adults and teens that you don't hear much about. He's a real strong family man. I think the idea of family values and practicing those, not just saying the words, is extremely important, as I think we would all agree on that. And as far as running the governorship of Indiana, he's done quite well. So I don't know a tremendous amount about him, but what I do like is the fact, probably the strongest thing I like about him is he is out of the Washington, D.C. framework of legislation and all of that. He's, even though he's served in that a little bit, dabbled in it a little bit, he's more from the state level and not in the national scene, which a lot of people are really upset with right now. So I like the fact that he's kind of on the outside looking in. I think that's a plus. I don't think a lot of the experience that people want to tout, being a strong person on the inside, is going to work this time around.
One of the things about Pence, he was a large advocate of tax reform, and he made the largest tax cuts in the history of Indiana, and the budget he had when he left office, state's budget surplus was at the highest level it had been in hundreds of years. So one thing about it, he's a good manager, financial manager, although that's not his, that's not his trump in the business world. He's not a, he's not a businessman as we think, but he had to do a lot of things. He seemed to have been on both sides of the fence, and his party was concerned about which way he was going to land. But anyway, so I think, because we are electing kings, if we do it as citizens, it's incumbent upon us to try to figure out who these people are, who these people are running with the presidential candidates, because, that can help us make decisions. Because I know, according to the polls, and I have yet to been polled, I don't know anybody that I've known and talked to that has been polled, but it seems like the polls keep giving Trump more points. And right now he's not neck and neck, but he's close to Clinton. And so, that's a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you're going to vote. So I want to talk about this election. What do you think, the FBI piece, where does this come from out of the clear blue sky? What we found more emails. So what? And now they're saying, well, but we don't think that these emails are going to cause any, law enforcement on Clinton. So why did they bring it up in the first place? And, one of the senators thought that the FBI director needs to come before the Senate to explain this, what he just did. And then there was another side that said that the FBI is pro-Trump, and that's why he did what he did. But his job is incumbent on who's the president and keeping his job. I just think I don't know if he's a strong FBI director. What do you think, Ron? I just don't get that he's a strong guy if he's being played, or maybe he's a Trump, supporter.
Well, I don't know whether he's a Trump supporter or a Hillary supporter. I don't know that. But what I do know, or at least in my opinion, is that I think it's outrageous for him to do what he did. so few days before the election, because, you know, this is casting a shadow of doubt, okay, in some people that maybe hadn't made up their minds on Hillary or either way. And it just adds another level of uncertainty and fear in people that that maybe were thinking of voting for Hillary, and now, you know, they hear this. But of course, you know, there's no concrete evidence of anything. So, you know, for him to come out just a few days before the election and do what he did, I think I don't think he should have done it. And I think he needs to, what I would have liked to have seen is for him to be forced to say to the American people what exactly it is that that he found, you know, whether it's something that, you know, warrants further investigation, or if it's not a big deal, you know, if, you know, Hillary might be indicted down the line. I, you know, to leave the people hanging like that right before an election, I think it was done on purpose, actually.
What about you, Don? What do you think?
I think it was a travesty. I think that it should never have happened. He should have never did anything like that to put the FBI in the middle of politics. I wouldn't be surprised if he were removed or lost his position after the election. You know, it's one thing to come out and make an accusation like he did, because the damage has been done already. And another thing, when you run into a situation like this, people always remember the negative in the media, negative sales in the media. And you can make a mistake, and then they'll put it in the back of the newspaper or a correction. A lot of people will not even remember the correction that's been made 2 days before the election. It should never have been done. It was a travesty. I don't like it. But like I said before, this has been an election I've never seen before in my life.
Could I add something to what
sure.
they said?
Sure.
Both Don and Ron, not only that, gentlemen, but now that he came out, I agree with you, by the way, he should have never gotten the FBI in the middle of this. First, people thought, well, he's doing it to protect Hillary, and that's why he said nothing should be done. At least, even if you agreed or disagreed, you kind of knew where he stood. Then he comes out now and says, well, I said I'd come back, and we looked through 600,000 emails, and nothing further needs to be done, and just left everybody hanging. So now you don't know if he's trying to help or hurt Hillary, help or hurt Donald, or what he's trying to do. He's just added, as you said, Don, a massive amount of confusion in the whole middle of this, which shouldn't even be there.
All right. I want to move forward with an email that I found controversial, to say the least. I'm going to read at this email, and then I want to have a discussion with everyone about it. One of the things that we have been going through up and down is race relationships. And so I have an email from a gentleman, Penne Sanders, P-E-N-E, I assume it's Penne Sanders. And listening, you know, to this or reading this email, I was in awe. And I want to read it. I want to get feedback from everybody on the thoughts of reading it. And it has to do with race. Of course, Mr. Sanders is a Caucasian gentleman, and you'll figure that out through the email. But it starts off by saying, I want to ask black people why they are so damn passive. We kill your children, mock you, take your riches, take your land, convince you God is white, cause so many problems of self-hate in your community, keep you poor, take your history, take your opportunity, and make your children believe the only heroes in the world are white men. And then you continue to give us the benefit of the doubt. We lock you up, and you still have us walk around like everything is okay. When will you stop calling on Jesus and do for yourselves? Is this how you react when we came to conquer you? This is bloody pathetic. I see no Moors here. Moors meaning Africans who were conquerors. All I see are confused monkeys. All right. Somebody want to tell me what you think about that? Tell me what you think about that, Ron.
Wow. I guess I'm a little bit in shock that somebody would actually, I mean, I guess that's how he really feels, you know, but to actually, I don't know. I'm in shock. I don't know what to feel. I defer to somebody else.
Don, tell me how you feel.
Well, you know, David, I feel that a lot of it's true and a lot of it's untrue. Me being African-American can relate to a lot of what he said because we are the most forgiving group of people in the history that I know of. If what had been done to another group of people for 400 years, I don't know if they would have endured it. And it's really based upon our religion and our spirituality. We are a forgiving people. And I was taught that way. My parents were taught that way. My grandparents were taught that way. And their parents were taught that way. But that doesn't mean that we're stupid. Although we forgive, we're not stupid. You know, and then in that 400-year period of time, a lot of brainwashing was going on. And a lot of identity stripping was going on. We didn't really know who we were at some point in history. And he's referring to all of that. That's a very unsettling, I'm going to use that word, unsettling email that you got. I'm like, Ron, I don't know how to react to that. I'm 50-50 on it based upon what I just said.
I think that this political climate allowed someone to send an email like that. I think something happened and made that turn of events to allow people to feel they can now make comments like that. And, you know, and I the comments like that opened the doors, let me see where everything is. I think it's better to tell me that than not tell me, so I know who you are and, you know, how I need to handle it. But what you're saying is the church was dominant in the African-American community, but what he's saying is, yeah, that's what's keeping the African-American community passive, because you run the church and you believe that, you know, that all this is supposed to be like this and turn the other cheek. And when do we go to war? I think we went to war in the 60s, and I think that was civil rights movement that we had. We haven't had that since. So, I, you know, what do you feel, Frank?
Well, I think that the narrator of that message is full of baloney. let me tell you, I used to question when I was a kid why we were in the predicament as black people that we were. I had not a lot of respect for people that had went before me, because I figured, like the writer of that they had taken too much BS from the people, you know, that were oppressing them. But the writer of that narrative is probably an Afro-American, or probably a Muslim or a Muslim. All right. So there's a lot of things that you have to take out and examine. But let me just say this, that as you said, you know, I'm forgiving, or as was just repeated, I'm forgiving, but I don't forget. And I think the math table says that war is not a profitable business except for the people that create the war machines. It's a losing business for everyone. I, as an Afro-American citizen, at no time in my life have I ever felt better about my surroundings and my environment. So I don't want to go back, as Mr. Trump proclaims. I do believe in fighting for my rights. I don't necessarily believe that God is white or black or pink or yellow. I do believe that worship is important, and I believe there is a God. It's evident to me in everything that I see, do, and touch. I don't think I would have survived like my ancestors did during this passage of slavery, given you know, how terrible and how harsh that treatment was. But nevertheless, we survived as a people. And I want to see a person like Tim Kaine, if I'm going to be support them, defend this country, defend our flag. I want to see religions that are inclusive about everyone from top to bottom, female, males. And because that to me is the sign that God has respect for everything that he's created. So, I don't subscribe to his thought process whatsoever. And I think the writer of that is probably more likely an Afro-American or a person from the Middle East.
No, he has a picture on the thing. He's actually Caucasian. His picture is on the email, it's up in the left-hand corner.
Well, you can be Caucasian and be from the Middle East, of course.
Well, that's true. Let's see, Ron, what do you, you already talked about that. Bruce, what about you? What do you feel about that?
Well, I agree with a number of things that have already been said, but I would add a little different perspective to it, of course, because I'm white, but that's not the only qualification, but since we're all voicing that, so our listeners understand. I think, being a God-fearing man and a Christian, that I strongly believe in the power of, the meek shall inherit the earth. And all I mean by that, I tend to think of that as, I don't want to see everything solved by physical violence. I get very impressed by a number of friends I've had over the years and still have from run into from time to time, and just strangers, that I think African-American people as a whole should not be ashamed of being forgiving, or and I'm not saying they are, but that there should not be the impression that being somewhat passive is a bad thing. There's a time for physical violence, but not all the time. There's a time for trying to understand each other's perspective and fighting, in quotes, in a way that isn't physically violent. And I learned a lot growing up in the Detroit, working in the downtown Detroit area during the riots. From my African-American and other minority friends I worked with every day. We had very long and interesting conversations, and we disagreed on a lot of things, but it was never personal. It was never an attack on each other's person. It was more like, here's how I see it, here's how you see it, and we'd learn from each other. And I think the process of going through different ways of achieving your goal other than burning something down or beating someone up, and it goes both ways. I'm not saying it's black on white. It's white on black, too, sometimes, and just people on people, that it always has to be violence to get the result. It does not, and we don't work hard enough at doing that. I really think that because you oftentimes see the one that supposedly turns the other cheek or is able to solve the problem in a more forgiving way sends a much more powerful message to that other person or that other group than one that tries to put up his dukes or tries to pull a trigger on something. I think if you can find the other way to do it, that's much more powerful.
I do too, but tell me a country that is in existence today that did not use violence to beat itself.
Well, don't mistake what I said, David. There is, I hate to say it, there is a time for physical violence, and we all know it's never going to go away. I'm just saying we should work towards more ways to solve problems out of that realm of physical exercise than in it. And lately we seem to be increasing that as a problem solver instead of decreasing it.
Right. I agree. Any other comments? Don, you have any other comments to make about that? I mean,
yeah, I think what Bruce is saying is there's a difference in being meek, M-E-E-K, and weak. They are two different words. Meek means that I have the authority and the ability to break your neck, but instead I lift you up. In fact, the meek shall inherit the earth. So, Bruce, that's exactly what you were saying.
Yes,
that's the way
it
I
was.
Interpret it.
Many times my father taught me in our many travels that the one that appears to be the weakest many times is the strongest, which is what you just said.
Okay,
that person or that group doesn't care too much or very much or at all about what others think. He or she is getting to a goal, and if, as Don said, if they can get to that goal by lifting someone up, they're going to go a long ways towards a sustained solution and a more impressive victory of accomplishing that goal than fighting somebody and bloodying their nose or worse. And I couldn't agree with Don more in that regard.
I want to ask a question, and I'm going to ask two different people this question because I want to see your thoughts. But Donald Trump said he wants to be the law and order candidate. Bruce, how do you interpret that? What does he mean by he wants to be the law and order candidate?
Well, I'll give you a wish of what I hope he means. Nobody knows.
No, that's what he said he wants to be.
What he means. But I think there needs to be a proper balance in many different ways between the public and our authoritative group, whether it's local police, county police, state police, federal police, whatever. It's very accurate to say it's a thin blue line between calm and proper existence with each other and chaos. And we can't make the police the enemy, but we can help it be accountable and serve an appropriate position in enforcing the law. And I'm not so sure we're doing a very good job of that right now. And again, I go back to the press because of all forms. They could be such a help in accentuating the positive. And I'm not saying bury the negative, but the negative, if that's the only thing you hear about because that sells, quote unquote, then that's what everybody thinks is going on all the time and nothing else is even close to it. Well, that's not true either. We need a full and accurate way of the way things are being done, handled, and work with both groups, both the public and the police, and getting them to come together. You hear many, many communities that have turned back to walking police in neighborhoods so that the neighborhood police officers become more of ingrained in that neighborhood. They know the people, they know the families know them, and they can count on them. They build a relationship. It's not a sterile relationship, and we need more of that. That's part of a nonviolent solution. It's not the only thing, but it's a big part of it.
What about you, Don? When you hear Donald Trump said he's going to be the law and order president, the law and order candidate, what do you think he's saying?
This is how I interpret it, David, and you heard me say this many times. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And when you look at that character, Donald Trump, you got to go back to his childhood. his dad put him in military school and in reform school, as we would call it, because he was so belligerent and unruly and wanted to be a hool. Today he would be a thug. They call it thug in our vernacular in today's society. And then, if you really want to look at his boy history, and then he decided to be a politician, you got to look at who you're hanging with, because association make assimilation. If you ever want to look at where you're going, look at who you're hanging with. And if you're around guys like Giuliani, that sounds like him. And he has a resentment against Hillary because she ran for New York and beat him, and he dropped out. So he has that type of soundbite in him. And then Christie. So look at the people he's associating with. You know, that's why he would say something like that. So he's speaking about something that's coming out of his heart. That's why he would say that.
All right. You know, we heard from Melania Trump. She's finally starting to make speeches. And her first speech was like an anti-bullying campaign speech kind of thing, that we anti-bullying. There was a lot of press on that, that's saying it's hypocrisy because the biggest bully they knew was Donald Trump. So as a first lady, how do you see Melania Trump as a first lady, Ron?
Well, you and I had this conversation a few days ago, and this may be a little prejudicial, I guess, on my part, but it's how I feel, so I'm going to say it. I just have a hard time seeing somebody that's from another country being the first lady of the United States. You know, that may offend some people, but that's how I feel. Yes, she is an American. You know, she is an American citizen. But I just still see her as somebody from, is it Slovenia? I don't even know what country she's from, but I think it's Slovenia. So you know, it bothers me. It bothers me to the point where that's an important factor. And I voted this morning, so, you know, my voting is done and over, but that was a factor.
Frank, what do you think about Melania Trump as a first lady? How do you see her being taken by the rest of the world? I mean, we've seen pictures of her nude and stuff when she was a model, but model nude, it's no big deal. But how do you think that takes on the rest of the world about the United States? If anything, I mean,
let me tell you, it's a total travesty. It's a total embarrassment. It is the most, one of the most ridiculous things that I've seen. Yeah, she's naked. That's on Facebook. She's being compared with the wife of the current president. And, you know, I've heard it said by people who said to me they're not prejudiced, but the wife of the current president is ugly. And this naked picture is an attractive woman, and if nothing else, I'll enjoy her time in office by, you know, looking at her, something to that effect. Okay.
Wow.
So she's attractive to those people who want to see, for me, it's a boy's body with some girl ornaments on there that have been surgically placed. Okay. You know, I go back to, I think it's Maya Angelou with the sway of the hips, et cetera. So I like some meat on the bone. Nobody likes a bone but a dog. And I don't want to get too deep in trying to depreciate her value. But I also share this problem with having a previous foreign national who's now Americanized at the White House when there is classified material obviously going to be left around. She's from an Eastern European country. I mean, Mr. Trump has problems with Muslims, but evidently he doesn't have problems with people from Eastern European countries. And I do have a problem with that because those were communist rule countries, and not everyone in that country, in my mind, can be trusted. The other thing is that it's been reported and confirmed that she earned income in the United States of America before she had the right to earn income. She didn't have her paperwork completed. So 6 months before then, she earned $20,000 or more, was paid, which is against the law. And that may, in fact, affect her citizenship once this election is over. So I think, depending on what the outcome of the election, I think people are going to go after her for that illegal activity. Lastly, I'd like to just indicate that, in my mind, Trump cheated on his second wife with her. For the second time, he took he cheated with her. And the guy that where he met her, I think, was just basically putting women together, attractive women together, so rich millionaires could come in and find the wife. So I think it was nothing more than how she got here. I think was more not about modeling, but more about being able to marry a wealthy person and for your beauty and their money. So that's I see us as a laughing stock for many countries, Canada, Australia, England, and the list just goes on and on. She is not the type of person. She has, we've got all these ladies that we're talking about have college educations. All of them have went to elite educational institutions. We've got a person that basically indicated that she had a college degree, which she does not have, and a person that has a reputation of being unclothed, which is going to continuously come up. So it's not the right example or model that I would want for my children or my community.
All right. I want from each of you just 1 to 3 words to answer this question. But because I remember when the Republican leaders were telling themselves that Trump's dominance in the polls over the summer of 2015 was just a fluke and would end because his statements about race and about women, the military and trade were just too much. But as evidence began to pile up from the polls, surveys and interviews with supporters, he built a broad demographically and ideologically diverse coalition of people to vote for him or want him to be in the White House. So tell me in 1 or 2 or 3 words, what is the pizzazz or what is the charisma? What is it that Trump has that appeals to 50% or more or less of Americans? What is that thing that he has? Because even the GOP didn't think he was going to be the nominee, but now he's their nominee. A lot of them are in awe. What was it that Trump had that makes America love him, Don?
I'm glad you called on me because I got it. Frank, I want to kind of piggyback on what Frank just said first before I answer your question, David. We got a club here, Frank, called King of Diamonds. She's fitting in real good.
Oh, wow. I know the King of Diamonds.
Anyway, she fit in real good. Now, the question you asked, David, here's what made the Donald Trump brand so popular for the people to digest and get on board with. For 8 years, the Congress and Senate has made it their job to stifle everything that Barack Obama did. Now, there are many problems that we faced in America. Many problems 8 years ago. And we managed to get through them. But the thing is, there was a muzzle put on President Barack Obama. And at first, I thought that maybe this country may do well with a businessman running this country like a business. But the more I heard the real person show up in Donald Trump, he stuck his foot in his mouth every time he opened it. And he destroyed himself. That's what happened. But the thing is, I thought from the beginning that maybe we might need a person that knew how to handle business. But I'll tell you, I changed real quick once he started to talk. Like I say, what's in the heart, it'll come out of the mouth. So America has been hoodwinked.
So your three words are what?
My three words are, we've been hoodwinked. He's not the real Donald Trump. We've been hoodwinked.
We've been hoodwinked. Okay, what about you, Bruce? Give me three words that you think. What is it that is so appealing about Mr. Trump?
Well, it might be three or four. Tapping into five national frustrations.
Okay.
Whether you like him or not, whether he does put his foot in his mouth a lot, he does have a huge ego, and he doesn't really care whether you like him or not. At least that's what he says. He probably does, but it's not so much him, but people. He's saying things that a lot of people, at least the way they admit it to the press and to the polls, is saying things that people think but are afraid to say. And he's tapping into I want to use the word frustration, not anger, not anything more stronger than that. But people are frustrated. Black, white, red, green, purple, orange, poor, rich, you name it. We're creating this social country club, and we're all excluded from it, meaning the ones out here trying to earn a living and have a quality of life. And whether you agree with them or not, I think the majority of the public right now says, yeah, he's the closest thing we got between these two to get us closer to being included in that club.
All right, I want to move on because I want to ask the same question about Hillary. I want to make it even. So, Frank, give me a couple of words to what is it that 50%, let's just say right now, 50%, I hope it's not, but let's just say 50% of America to like Trump. What is it that he has that some Americans like?
Well, to be able to tell you what Americans like about Hillary, I have to give you three words about the dislike for Trump. Appeals to racist elements in our society. So his appeal is to racist, and so that pumps Hillary up in my mind because she has decency. And so that's important.
Okay. Ron, what do you think it is about Trump that some Americans fell in love with?
You mean Hillary?
No. I'm still with Trump.
Okay. I think what the three words, my three words are lies, drama, and more lies. And let me explain that.
Okay. Please.
I think Trump has been feeding on, he's been instilling fear. He's been instilling fear in a lot of Americans. And for him to make statements like "Make America Great Again," that to me is offensive, because I think America is and has always, for hundreds of years been the greatest country on earth. And for him to say, that's instilling fear. He's basically saying that our borders aren't safe, that Muslims are going to take over, that we're not a powerful country, and it's all baloney. So, and it's drama, because everything that he says is unfounded and there's no evidence to support any of it.
All right. So, but let's move on to the other side. What is it about Hillary that has caused 50% or more or less of Americans to say she's a crook, she's no good, she shouldn't be the president of the United States? What is that? Because I hear all the time this, she's a crook and she did all these things. What is it that has caused, what is it that Hillary has done that has caused, let's just say 50% of Americans to say she's not the one to be president? What do you think, Don?
Well, David, you got to know that this late, this woman has been in politics for 30 plus years. I mean, from the first lady, you can say she was very instrumental in being a first lady. And also Senate, Secretary of State, now running for president. I mean, she's got a track record that's unbelievable and experience. And I don't know anybody that would do a job for 30 plus years that doesn't make mistakes. I've been doing this for quite some time, and I know I've made some mistakes, some bad choices. Let me put it that way. I would have done it different. And I know she would have done some things different. But when you have been doing something for 30 plus years, you have a track record to run on. That a person that has never done it, they don't even have a track record. So she's got a good track record. Let me put it like that.
Okay. Ron, what is it about Hillary that's pissing people off that says she shouldn't be president? What is it? What is that? A few words. What is it that we only got about a couple of minutes left? What is it that makes people say that she's not the one for the president, that she's a criminal? And Trump saying he wants to prosecute her and put her in jail. What is that?
So your question is what makes people think that she's not fit to be president?
Yes.
Well, I think her trustworthiness, you know, and I'll tell you, I voted for her, but, you know, I know that she's lied about things, and I know that Donald Trump has. They're all liars. But I go back to what Don just said, you know, she's got the experience of, you know, being a world leader for three decades, and she's got the respect of the world. You know, what does Donald
Ron,
Trump have
Ron,
in comparison to that?
I got to ask you this question. You said she lied about things. What did she lie about? I don't know.
Well,
so I'm asking, sure a lot of people don't know.
Maybe. Okay.
Well,
right.
let me tell you what she. She lied about the fact that she was in a war zone and flew into a combat zone one time and was out and out figment of her imagination. That's one of the things that's come her way. So that sets the table for her being like a lot of us have been at certain times, stretching the truth to an unbelievable level.
Okay. So
I think you know, maybe I shouldn't have used the word lie. Maybe I should have said, you know, changed her mind on some issues. But you know, that it's a free country. You're allowed to change your mind on issues.
One of the biggest things I always hear, I think we've all heard, is she's a big liar. She's a criminal. What is that? You know, what is that? The emails are not worthy of prosecution. I don't know what else there is.
Just your imagination.
Run it away with me.
All right. So wait, we only got about 60 seconds or so left, and I want to had a mailbag. In the mailbag, there was one question from a young man who wants to ask the panel a question so quickly, so somebody can answer this question for this young man. It's, how do you sufficiently acknowledge and balance your marriage and your friends? Or is that question too much for 60 seconds? Why don't you take a stab at that, Bruce?
Always try to do the right thing with proper guidance from above.
Oh, that was not a good answer.
Well, it was for me. It works every time.
Well, I agree with that. It's a great answer, but when your friends come over your house and you just got married and your new wife is saying your friends or me, which is going to be, you're kind of in a catch-22
well,
situation.
Okay. I'll get,
no, you're
I'll
not.
Make it
it's
easier.
Your
wife comes first, friends come second.
All right. Well, we
Roger
glad
that.
You stayed
Roger
with
that.
Yes, nothing
my
else.
Man, you better do it
vote
that way.
On Tuesday. I don't care who it is you're voting for or something, but get out there and let people know that you are voting for the future of this country. So have a nice week, but on Tuesday, or if you haven't voted already, please do on Tuesday. Thanks to the panel for all the conversation and good words today. I will see you next week with our new president or president nominee. So good night, panel, and talk to you all again next week, 6 o'clock. Bye.
We'll have a lot
have
to
a
talk
great
about.
Week and vote.
God bless. God bless.
God bless.